shucking jive.
All you racing fans, stand up, clap your feet. I mean, clap your heads. Welcome to the Goat Rodeo.
Live from the CRN Studios in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, this is Racing Through History.
Hello, race fans. Welcome to this edition of the Goat Rodeo. My name is Jeff Gilder. I'm the host, as I have been for the past 9 years or close to it, whatever. If you hadn't been around that long, hey, you didn't miss much.
No.
They missed a hell of a lot, didn't they? Tell them what they missed, Jack, while I get the stream.
Oh, man. We had interviews with everybody that knew anything about racing back in the day for years and years and all kinds of
stuff. He sold whiskey for years.
Yeah, exactly. Man, some of the best people. So, yes, they definitely missed things.
And one of our earlier guests... One of the earliest guests was Little Bud Moore
used to be in the studio
back in the old broom closet days. Yeah. Little Bud came one cold night in like January or something like that
with his Ditch Obama sticker on his truck.
Yeah.
Oh, he did have that on there. I forgot about
sure
that.
Did.
Yeah.
Little Bud wasn't too into political correctness.
No, not at all.
Yeah. That was not his strong point.
And speaking of Little Bud, they had a memorial this past weekend in Hollywood, South Carolina.
In Little Bud's garage. Yeah. You know, a swimming pool was shaped like a Chevrolet emblem.
Is that right?
Yeah, like the bow tie.
Is that the truth. Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
It's a bow tie. It's got a one-off swimming pool.
I guess the Marion Cox crew never went in it.
No, they would. That would be like a kryptonite. Yeah. Yeah, but had the official Little Bud send off this week. That's kind of sad, but you know, one thing that registered with them, and it was really almost an afterthought, it certainly was not extravagant. Was that little race we had at Lakeview in honor of the Little Bud Vintage Classic? That struck a chord with them. So I'm glad that it did, and. The family's question now is it going to be done again? Is it going to be kind of an annual event? So I guess the challenge has been kind of put out there.
I think y'all need to make it an annual event and have a Little Bud Moore trophy type thing, second annual.
So that was pretty cool, and like I said, it was almost an but a lot of cool stuff starts as afterthoughts, you know, and stuff scribbled on the back of a napkin. Right. That kind of stuff is usually the best things at the end of the day is that impromptu. Yes, along the way since we've been to Goat Rodeo, some of our vintage people aren't with us no more. That's a kind of a shocker, but a lot of, you know, Jeff, we've kicked around the idea, or you have, of the 10th anniversary of the Columbia Speedway reunion.
It's going to happen.
And one of the stars of the first one was, of course, Little Bud Moore.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, he was. Absolutely.
He was a celebrity.
Yep. So I got to say this about Little Bud. You know, he came out and supported us as we were getting ready, and he took an interest in it. And if y'all remember, when we first started cleaning that place up, we thought, well, if we have 1,000, 1,500 people out here, that's going to be a good deal. And people brought equipment, I mean, track hoes and bulldozers and dump trucks and diesel fuel and donated it to us to work. And then the more equipment we got, the more we did, you know. And the more we did, the more attention we got, and the more people started driving up saying, hey, what's going on out here? So as that was happening, I think it was on maybe the Wednesday or the Thursday before the event, me and little Bud were standing down there. We still had the pine trees in next to his truck. And I said, man, I'm gonna call and get some more Porta Johns and do this and do that. And he says, how many people you think gonna come out here? I said, well, we first thought we had 1,200 people, we'd be doing good. And then we thought maybe it might be 1,800. I said, dude, I'm thinking we might have 10,000 people out here. And little Bud said, hey, boss, you ain't gonna have no 10,000 people out here. No, you know, he said, I love what you're doing, but you ain't gonna have no 10,000 people out here. I promise you. And then on that Saturday, he come up and we went, holy mackerel! You know,
yeah, it was unbelievable. Yeah. That was a fantastic event.
You ain't gonna have no 10,000. You're gonna have 30,000. From how many states and countries?
From 17 states and Puerto Rico.
And it became so much bigger than the Races Reunion event, Jeff, because they still use that today for events in Casey.
Well, you know, the Sellers brothers, Bobby and his brother, you know, they have that property. I guess it's in a trust. I don't know what the legal term is, but their father ran the Columbia Speedway and owned that property for years and kept the property in the family. And Bobby come up to me, you know, and he says, man, if we can do something like this right here, he said, we'll clean this thing up. And they went out there and they spent, I mean, lots of money, $100,000, $200,000. I don't know what they spent, you know, but they cleared all the trees out of that thing, and they put in irrigation, and they sowed a special kind of grass in the infield for events and that kind of thing. And since then, they've continued to improve it.
I spent a lot of time in Columbia with Coastal Margaret, and every now and then we'll see some event going on at the old Columbia Speedway, historic Columbia Speedway.
Yeah, it's really cool to see something like that get carried forward.
Yeah, I mean, you're the guy that got it going.
Yeah, well, all of us at that Christmas party.
At that Christmas party. That was just what I was talking about. That was an impromptu.
Yeah. That infamous Christmas party. It all come about right there.
Yeah.
Jim C was there. Robbie Soulsby was there.
I remember where we was at. We was in that back bedroom.
Yeah, it was in the office back there. Yep. Looking at it on Google Maps.
Looking at it on Google Maps, and one thing led to another.
Yep.
And 30,000 people showed up.
It's amazing, and we had no idea. I remember we sat there and we said, well, somebody said, well, I know this person or that person. I said, well, let's contact them and go out there and look at it. And we had been out there before the Christmas party and looked at the property, you know, and put the plan in motion. That was I think we looked at it on like December the 9th. And that might have been around the time we had the Christmas party. I can't remember if it was before or after. I can't remember. But we did it in April. So in that length of time, the whole thing came from just an idea to coming to fruition and having 30,000 people show up. And you know, people always talk about their event numbers and inflate their event numbers. That's one thing we wanted to make sure we knew what it was. Yeah. So we had a whole team of people. They all had yellow blazers on. They had clipboards and pens, and they stood there at the gate, and they asked everybody that came through the gate, how many are in your group, and what's your zip code? We took that information. We matched it up to clickers, guys that had clickers, counting cars and people in cars coming in the parking lot. We took all that data, we put it together, and it was right at 30,000 people. Yeah. One of the numbers came in just under 30,000, 29-something, and one of them came in just over 30, so we said 30. But we took all that information, gave it to the Chamber of Commerce there, and they declared that we had a $1.6 million impact, economic impact, on the Casey and the area for that.
And I wouldn't be surprised if that's the biggest event that's been held at the old Columbia Speedway since.
Ever.
Yeah.
But, you know, and ever. You're
probably
right.
Even when
ever.
It was racing.
Yeah. I mean, that's what kicked us off. Yeah. You know, we were a year old when we had that event, and But that was really cool.
Jeff, you went on John Boy and Billy.
I did. Yep. I was on the John Boy and Billy show. You heard it, didn't you?
Mm-hmm. I heard it.
Yep.
Sure did. Seemed like you was on it the second
year. I was on it like three times total.
But that first year really had the it had the magic.
It did.
I mean, the whole thing, obviously.
I hope we can rekindle that magic next year in 2018.
Well, in 2018, we start our 10th year.
Right.
Okay? So there will be milestones throughout 2018 that we need to recognize and celebrate, whatever. And then we need to have that 2019, April 2019 will be the 10th anniversary of the Columbia Speedway reunion.
Okay.
But 2018 starts the Racers reunion 10th anniversary.
Okay, so
January 22nd.
So the Columbia Speedway Racers reunion deal is going to be in 2019.
2019.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
2019. We got a year to plan it, over
Good.
A year.
Oh, but, man, I'm excited already.
Yeah.
I think I'll make my hotel reservations.
I think you should.
I think so.
I think we need to rent out an entire... We did that.
Oh, I know.
We filled up the Wingate there once. Yeah. Remember and one year there, I can't remember which one it was, they built that brand new Holiday Inn Express.
Yep.
And we went in and rented all those rooms in that thing, and they didn't get it finished.
Yeah.
That was a mess.
We were on the way there that day, and Bill Tripp was bringing that number one little white car, and it had never been restored at that time. It wouldn't even run. We were just dragging it through the reunion for a vintage car. It had a flat tire on his trailer right there at Camden.
Yes, sir.
And we had to go to the Camden something another.
I took you to a good place.
Yeah,
in
you
Camden.
Was with us. What?
Yeah,
you was leaving.
I told you where to go. So,
it had the flat tire out there on I-20.
Yeah, we went to Quality Tire in Camden on Highway US-1. Yes, sir, buddy. They fixed us right up.
We finally got to the track. And I had never driven my old car, hardly none, other than out of the garage. And I didn't know which wheel was going to fall off first or what was going to happen. Was going around the Columbia Speedway, and here come Jeff Gilder flying up beside me in a 55 Chevrolet race car. Remember that?
Yeah. Yep.
That car made it to several reunions.
Yeah, that was one that was the old Bob. My mind just went blank. Out of Asheville area.
Bob Presley?
Presley.
Number 54.
It was the old Bob Presley.
That's right. Number 50. It seemed like it was gold and black.
It was red. Maroon.
What?
Yeah, it was maroon. Yeah,
red. Maroonish red. Yeah.
Gold numbers or something like that. Yeah. Yeah. Jimmy Johnson was hauling that old car around there for a while.
Is Jimmy Johnson still.
Well, Jimmy had a couple of major heart surgeries. He just finished his bypass surgery, and he is recuperating. He's going through rehab, and he hopes to be on the road to doing shows within a month or so. That's his goal.
Is he still hauling a Racers reunion from time to time?
He hauls a Racers reunion car, which is a simulator.
Right.
From event to event. Yeah, he sure does.
Yeah, I like Jimmy. I saw him in Daytona last February.
When you start talking about guys like that and what they went through and what they've been through to be part of this, Jimmy was pulling that with his motorhome, if you remember.
Right.
His motorhome broke,
right.
Okay, and he had the thing somewhere up in North Carolina at a shop to be fixed. We're all scurrying around trying to figure out how to get the money to fix the thing. It had a busted block or a head or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was expensive. Went up there, and a bunch of Mexicans were living in it.
Living in it?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it was something else. I mean, poor Jimmy. Golly.
I'm going to tell you this on the air. I've already told you this before, but Jimmy Johnson said, what can we do to get Jeff Gilder down here for the route back to the Roots event in Daytona?
Yep.
So, Jeff, what are you going to do this year?
I'm going to come, man.
All right. We want you to come.
So that second Racers reunion, Tim, man, I'm having brain fade big time tonight. What's his name from Middle Georgia Raceway? They contacted us about. Well, we contacted him, Johnny Mowley, and people talked about Middle Georgia, and it was still there. And we went down and looked at it. We found Tim Thornton. We found out who owned it. It was Tim Thornton. He's a realtor there. And turns out Tim's family owned the racetrack, and they were going to have that thing busted up, and they're going to build a commercial thing in there. But Tim liked the old racetrack, okay? He came up, and we made him a VIP guest of our second Racers Reunion at Columbia, and he loved it. went back and put all the wheels in the motion, got approval for us to have the first Middle Georgia Racers reunion. You know, so we went down and helped him do a couple of those, and then he took them on himself. Tim later bought the racetrack out of the family group and still owns it. And he's one hell of a nice guy, man. But just think about the people you meet doing this.
Oh, yeah.
So we did the Middle Georgia Racers reunion was a big hit. Then the Shelby deal at the fairgrounds.
The Shelby deal had so much excitement and so much potential.
Dude, we ran five divisions of vintage cars up there.
And it was a good
and one afternoon in about 3 hours or something like that, 3 or 4 hours, we had practice and ran five divisions.
And had a full grandstand.
Yeah, packed a house.
A beautiful grandstand.
Beautiful grandstand. That was quite the
That was
endeavor.
April 2012, okay? And that's when I said, okay, I got to quit for a while. Because so far we had been holding events and we'd been able to get sponsors to help us cover the cost of the events, and they, most of them had run slightly in the black, no major windfalls there, but you know, breaking even and coming out with a coin or two. And so we went up there to do that Shelby event and did not sell a single sponsorship for it. Okay? And I was sweating it. Man, I was sweating it. But the deal I had with the fairgrounds, they gave me the back gate, and I got a third of the front gate. And the good news was we had a good show of cars show up through the back gate, and we packed the house on the front and got out of there and broke slick even. I said, okay, I need to hang this up for a little while. But and I didn't do another event until we did the first Salt Air Jam 3 years ago.
Wow.
That was a little a mini spin-off in the middle of all that. Now I forgot the name of the town. The Sherrall Speedway reunion came out of nowhere.
Yep,
just
right.
Literally, I was looking
Ingram?
Lynn Ingram. I was looking for a ghost track to talk about on the show one night. And just, you know, how you can get to look it on the internet, on Facebook mess, and somehow come up with the name of Lynn Ingram through just, I don't know, just pecking here and going there and go, and was able to make contact with her. And man, did that.
I drove out there one day and did a video walking around it before any, you know, found that thing buried back there in the middle of the woods.
I saw a post from her not too awful long ago. That track is for sale.
Yeah, she calls me about once a year to see if I want to buy it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've had continual contact.
If you could move it to Brunswick County, you might be interested, huh?
Yeah. She's since had it, just looking at Google Earth, it was about a total 7-acre track, T-R-A-C-T of land that it was on, and she's had that completely clear cut, I guess, for the timber value, so the racetrack is extremely exposed now. There's nothing around, no trees.
That sucker will grow up like crazy though in no time.
Yeah, now it will.
Yep.
But there was a mobile home subdivision right adjacent.
Yep.
To it.
Airport on the other side.
An airport on the other side, and man, I know enough now to know you'd never get that through.
Yep.
Through the various chambers to reopen that thing. You might could have reunions there, but as far as
weekly events,
that ain't gonna happen. That is not gonna happen.
Yep.
But that was a spinoff event, so it was a little unofficial reunion that happened.
The Racers Reunion Memory Lane Hall of Fame.
Yep.
2009 first induction class came out of all this.
And y'all had at least two of them.
Had two of those, yeah.
So there's been a lot going on the last several years.
Yep.
So.
I think that all the momentum that all of this, us and everybody else involved, the momentum and the energy that got going, some of it resulted in all the stuff that goes on at Daytona now.
I agree.
I agree with that. I know there's a lot of interest in Daytona, but I think the momentum became such a groundswell.
Well, there's one thing that happens. You know, when we came on board, the Historic Speedway Group up there had already started work. They'd had their first event, And those guys had some stuff going on. The Living Legends of Auto Racing were operating there in Daytona. They had their stuff going on. And then we came along. We kind of stirred the pot, you know. We came along, started bringing in cameras and
it became sort of a clearinghouse or a central base.
That was
of
the
operation.
Idea. And that worked for a while. And then when Facebook opened up groups and that kind of stuff, everybody went to do their own thing, you know.
This was all before Facebook.
Yeah.
Before Facebook was mainstream.
Right. Yeah, Facebook was still a college product when this happened.
Yeah, it was going on, but it had not reached the saturation.
Yeah, they hadn't opened it up for, it was just opening up. But that's, the whole Facebook thing and their group feature, that's where everybody went to. You know, our traffic on our website went in half. When they opened that up, I mean, it just literally went to half.
Yeah, and that was largely responsive, and still is.
Still is. Yeah, they're still there. Anybody can do anything they want to do. You can have a Facebook group and put photos, videos, comments, and all those kind of things on it. When we started Racers Reunion, you couldn't find that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. You could find a forum here and there, but you didn't have a platform that had videos and all of the media that you could bring to it.
Well, you know, that's just one example, but Facebook has changed the whole way that people react to the internet.
Yeah, Facebook changed society.
Yeah. And still is.
Yeah, still is changing it, absolutely.
And I don't think anyone can predict where that's going to go, but it's...
No.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah, back in the day, we thought the internet would be a series of websites. One would go to a website and do whatever, but that's...
Well, Jeff was the first one I ever heard use the term social media.
Yeah,
you're right. First time he told me that, I said, what the hell is that?
My company's name in 2008 was Zeus Social Media.
Yeah.
And people went, huh?
What is that?
That's the first time I ever read it. On the little off our first radio station had social media.
Yep, Zeus Social Media. We were a social media entity back then, and out of frustration from trying to push a rope, as my dad used to call it, I changed the name to Zeus Digital Marketing.
There you go.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, social media has become a buzzword. But if you go to Google Trend and you put in digital marketing, it's on a steady rise up.
Cool. So,
yeah. So it wasn't a bad move. I didn't hurt myself with that.
You know, it's safe to say all of this is moving at such speed, it's very difficult. Getting in front of it is virtually impossible. Staying up with it is
hard.
Impossible.
Yeah. And my entire business is that way. You know, I deal with clients every day, and their only exposure to this part of the business is how it affects their business. But we got 200 clients. That we deal with this part of the business for 200 clients, and we get to see the trends and the analytics and those kind of things. But it's still hard to get people to listen and understand. Here's where you need to be, and here's what you need to do. You know, it's still a difficult thing. It really is.
It's very because no one knows where it's going to go.
The thing that we've always had in our favor was that we were. Our work ethic was very good here at Zeus Social Media. And we didn't mind putting in the effort that it took to do these things, like this program.
We've been
running this program for going on 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, you can't quit.
And just about every week. Just about.
But, you know,
we got a good record.
Yep.
In that same vein, though, there's countless other shows like internet-based shows now.
Yep.
You know, we were pretty rare and pretty unique in the beginning.
But we have done 3 to 4 a week, up to 6 a week, racing-related shows on and off for going on 10 years.
Yeah.
Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of shows. I mean, 1,000 a year, easy.
Yep.
You know, and, thousands of shows.
I'll tell you something else. In this same time frame we're talking about, we have seen... and we were talking about it, but we have seen the entire future of auto racing, where no one knows exactly what that's going to look like, if it even, you know.
And we predicted it.
Yeah. But it
unfortunately.
When all this started, racing was still fairly secure, and we thought we knew, you know, what it was going to be, and it had been that way for it had gotten just grown.
Yep.
But now none of that feels the same.
No, it's not the same.
Wow, this is fun reminiscing. The last
we got a whole year of it ahead of us, guys. That 10th anniversary is going to be fun.
Yeah,
we have been through a pivotal time frame in the scheme of racing, and the length of this of Racers Reunion has been right in this vanguard of change.
I can remember when we first started. You first started hearing people complain about the direction that it was going. You know. The top 35, remember when that happened, and the Lucky Dog Pass, when all that happened, and when the major changes started happening in racing in 2002, 3, 4, 5, in that range, and our people all spoke out. And the mainstream NASCAR people were just crushing us over that, you know. You're haters. We're not haters. We're lovers.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? I mean, we got accused of not buying into it, and still do. But the thing about it is we were the consumer, okay? And we are the consumer. We're the consumer. We saw what was happening to the thing that we had supported, and we voiced our opinion on it. And a lot of folks took shots at us for that. But
now everybody is of that position. Every critic. Yeah. Well, there is critics anymore.
A lot of people were in denial for a long time about it, you know?
But now, I mean, the that is just widespread and across the board. It is an accepted fact now that racing or NASCAR racing.
So you know, even in this 10-year period, earlier this year, late last year, we all got into a discussion about how the millennials would affect racing due to their lack of love for the automobile, you know, because the early millennials entering into the workforce and marriage and that kind of thing didn't seem to really care much for automobiles. And you saw, you know, a lot of millennial carpooling, Ubering, houses being built without garages. And everybody was upset about that. But I'm happy to say that they can only put up with that crap for so long. They're buying freaking Suburbans now.
Yep, exactly.
But that's not only driving the bus. As far as racing is a direct consequence, but people are not buying automobiles, period, on the levels that they had bought them forever.
Yeah.
The number of purchases is steadily going down on a worldwide, it's definitely an American scale, but people aren't buying cars anymore.
You got to understand what happened, and you saw General Motors and Ford and people trying to take, when you bought a late 90s, to early 2000 model Tahoe, Suburban, Chevy truck, or Ford, you could drive that thing for $300,000. I've seen many of them with 500,000 miles on them. And then now you see the manufacturers going to the 100,000 mile throwaway cars. You know, cars they shot themselves in the foot with reliability.
I read this statistic on several sites recently, and the number of 16-year-old people that get driver's license since 1983 to now has dropped 50%.
Yeah. My son didn't get his until he was 18. Wow. He had a car sitting in the driveway when he was 16. And the only thing he did in that car was get in it, turn the stereo on, pop the trunk lid, and shoot hoops to the stereo.
Okay.
But the thing is, there's lots of people trying to figure this out, and nobody knows there's not a silver bullet. But if people are not interested in automobiles, if they don't really there's no love affair there, then they are definitely not interested in automobiles racing each other.
Right.
That is even further down the list of potential interest. That's a problem for, I mean, it ain't just NASCAR, but it's everywhere. I mean, that will eventually work its way down the food chain if automobiles have no
interest.
NASCAR has chose to attack it by gimmicks. And, you know, and we know all of them. We know, and Jeff, you've just enumerated some of them. But they chose to just gimmick up the concept and somehow. And it wasn't just NASCAR, IndyCar. Lots of people have been trying to somehow stem the tide with gimmickry. And man, we're just absolutely drowning in gimmicks now.
And I think there's going to be more of that to come, unfortunately.
You know, I think the first gimmick I ever heard of was a Twin 50. If that you want to call that again, yeah. A special, you know, where you would have a, and that was at the local level, have a race, 50 lap race, and then you invert the whole field.
Well, how about
and have
back,
another 50 lap race?
How about
race?
Going back further than that? I mean, even when you title a race like the Sun Fun 101, is that a gimmick? 101 instead of 100?
Yeah.
It's a, you know.
But now, the typical, like Sunday's race at Kansas had rules going on in the middle of the race. Nobody, even the nobody there knew was a
oh
rule.
Oh, my God, let's talk about
yeah,
that for a minute.
Tell me about it, because I didn't get to see the race.
Can you explain that, Bobby, the men over the wall thing?
No, it's even more fundamental than that, but that's one of them. But on one of the restarts, Martin Truex was leading the race, and Kansas is one of the – it's not a trioval, it's a very broad D-shaped – a bowed out front stretch. It's so bowed that the fast way around the track is to cut below the white line on the front stretch because it makes it a lot shorter, just a shorter distance. So this was a restart. They waved the green flag, and Martin Truex, who's on the, you know, in first place, he pulls down below the white line where they all run, and they wave the green flag, and they immediately black flag him. Mm. To everybody at the congregation, the TV announcers, everybody and his brother does not know what's going on.
I'm going to ask Patrick if he can come on too, because he had a great commentary on that last night. We can let's talk about the race.
Okay, let's do it.
I mean, but the fly in the ointment even now was Kevin Harvick was right behind Truex on this race, and he followed Truex down below the white line.
So both of them were down.
No, both of them were below the white line, but only Truex had to make a pass through the pits penalty.
Wow.
And they come up with some, you know, kind of a lame brain excuse like they did the week before when, you know, Jimmy Johnson pitted out of his box and backed up and done this and done that. They were just, you know, they were creating rules as the then so all the drivers start immediately calling into the crew chief wanting to know what is the rule on restarts. So it's obvious they don't know. They're in the race and they don't know this.
Now who would have been making that rule at that point?
NASCAR says they informed the drivers of this particular at this particular drivers meeting. This was, apparently was not an pre-existing condition. Mm-hmm. This was a new rule that was implemented right then at that driver's meeting.
Wow. I mean, that's very unusual.
But even that being said, they still didn't apply it universally. Yeah. I mean, they didn't apply it equally.
Yeah.
So when Patrick started his show, he says, it sounds like they were making them up as they went along, but in fact, they followed the rules that they had written, but he also made the point, which I want him to talk to, is when the rules are getting more attention than the race, that's not exactly the way he said it, then there's something wrong.
That's kind of mirroring what's happening in the NFL.
Oh, absolutely right. True.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same thing.
Yeah, we're talking about everything
else
but the sport.
Yeah, nothing to do with the sport.
Yeah.
Now, in the – that wasn't the only stuff that was going on. As the race wore on, they ultimately would disqualify Matt Kenseth for too many men over the wall. I mean, disqualify. Wow. There was no penalty.
And then Jimmy Johnson comes along and has the same number of men over the wall, and that's confusing to the fan, but it's okay if that other member is servicing the driver.
But that's a – I mean, that's a very moot and academic
But you think about
point.
It from if the teams are having a hard time understanding it, how is the general
fans,
fan going to understand, oh, okay, yeah, that's not right when you do this, okay? Yeah.
And more importantly, and this is the part that, in my opinion, NASCAR is really missing the boat, is that do they think, and I'm not being facetious, do they think that all of this myriad of complex rules that nobody knows, not even the drivers in the race, do they think that somehow enhances the experience?
Apparently they do.
Do they think that makes the fan like it better? Because that's the ultimate.
You've got to please the fans.
No matter what
kind of sport.
Yeah, and no matter what you say, if it don't make the fans happy, how is that a good idea?
Yeah.
That's my point is, you might, I mean, your crazy rule might have some kind of merit, but if nobody likes it
or understands it or knows that it might happen,
yeah, how is that helpful?
Yeah,
that, I mean, that's my, and there's so many of them now, and they evolve from week to week as the race goes on.
Yeah.
As the race goes on.
So I got to say this.
Hey,
Patrick's on with us.
Hey
Patrick.
Patrick.
Hey, guys.
I was home at an unusually early hour on Sunday, and I was flipping the channels. Had a cold beer, and I said, oh, this is cool. I'm going to watch some race. I haven't watched a race all year long. And it came on. There was 31 laps left. And I thought, this is going to be perfect. 31 laps. I was asleep in 12 laps.
Only thing I can say is that must have been a powerful beer.
Oh, man. It wasn't a powerful race, I'll say that. It was boring as hell. I say, I got Patrick on. Hello, Patrick. I'm going to see if I can get you joined in to the video side, too.
Okay, if it'll work.
Clear it.
I'm hearing somebody.
That's me. I was trying to show Costa Margaret something.
Let's see here.
But we got on this whole line of thinking by talking about gimmicks as a way of attracting or shoring up the sport. And it's to the point now that gimmicks, it's new gimmicks from lap to lap almost.
Yep. So carry on, Patrick, while I'm working on the screen. What do you got to say about the rules?
Well, we covered it last night in Speedway Report, but I was listening to your conversation. And the point I made last night is that NASCAR actually did follow their own rules. However, I was at a loss as to why some of these rules existed. And I used the analogy of an NBA game where there's a saying in basketball, whereas if you don't notice the refs in the game, they did a good job. And the main story from that Kansas race was really all the officiating. Not the racing itself, whatever did or did not happen at the track. You thought it was a good race, you thought it was a bad race, whatever. You know, there were lots of on-track stories. Nobody cared. It was all about the officiating and these rules that were very complex. And if you live in the corporate world, or the cubicle world, if you do something like that, or if you have in your career, you notice that you had meetings to have meetings to have a meeting about the meeting. And now we have rules about the rules, you know, to have a rule to cover that rule is just too much silly stuff where Matt Kenseth's car is parked because the seventh guy has got a Sawzall, yet Jimmy Johnson is allowed a seventh guy because he took a tear off the windshield. Yes, NASCAR did not make anything up as it went along. It followed its own rule book, which is one of the chief complaints on all NASCAR fans on all these races, that they don't follow the rules or they make them up as they go along. They didn't. This was all spelled out. This is all clear. NASCAR followed the rule book for a T, but gosh, this thing is thick. They've got way too many rules,
but you know,
just in procedural.
Patrick, perception is reality too, though. You know that. To the fan in the stands, it looks like they are making them up.
Let's talk about perceptions for just a minute.
Sure.
All you folks that are listening on the website, you got to go look at the video. The perception is here that we actually got something going on here. That's cool. I got these guys up side by side. All right, carry on. Back to what you said. I'm done bragging.
I have a face for radio, so stick with the radio, everybody. You don't want to look at the video. It creeped over because I brought up the Formula One race in Austin, Texas Sunday as well, where Max Verstappen passed Kimi Raikkonen on the with two turns to go, pushed him from fourth to third. Well, that's a podium finish for Verstappen and the Red Bull. A podium finish is a big, big deal in Formula One. It's a major issue from third to fourth. Well, he passed on a part of the track where they determined was out of bounds. You know, there's track limits there where you see the pavement, and at the Circuit of the Americas, they got nice red, white, and blue paint over the curbs, you know, with a nice American color there, but you're not allowed to race over there, and Verstappen dropped too many wheels off onto the paint, so they tacked 5 seconds onto the end of his race time, and he finished fourth off the podium, and they put Raikkonen back to the podium. And that always bothered me with the Daytona and Talladega double yellow line, and you're not allowed to go down there, and this, that, and the other thing. I say if it's paved race on it, you know, we all saw that four wide move in 1999 where Jeff Gordon went on to take the lead and win the Daytona 500. He had two left wheels caught in the grass down there. I say, so what? These are professional race car drivers, supposed to be the best drivers in the world. Let them race. If they cause a 30-car pileup, that's not our job or NASCAR's job to police it with one more damn rule with double yellow lines, and you're not allowed to go below that. That's kind of what happened at Austin, Texas. It's just too many rules. You know, it's not that you're right, Jack. Perception is reality. But in the case of Kansas on Sunday, nothing was made up as they went along. NASCAR followed his rule book to a T. That's not my issue. My point is, why in the world are all these rules here to begin with? Do we need all these rules where it's, you know, what was Humpy's old saying? If it takes more than a sentence or two to explain it, it's too long. I mean, I've been rambling here for about 4 minutes just trying to explain two rule violations, and we still haven't completely explained it yet. It's too long. We had too many rules.
Hey, Patrick, if we back up 1 week, though, we had another example of this whole same phenomena in the Jimmy Johnson backing up the car to put on the lug nut deal, which was another case of it was actually in the rules, but nobody actually understood it and knew it was there, except apparently the 48 team. But to the fan in the stands,
it looked like a rule
and
violation.
And to every other driver in the race, it looked like a rule violation. And whether it was or whether it wasn't, people thought that it was. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That is killing the whole deal.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, it's one more nail in NASCAR's coffin. I agree with you 100%. I did not understand that when Johnson pitted. You know, the car is clearly over the line. He's clearly putting lug nuts on. They're clearly working on it. I get that. That's a penalty.
Right.
Isn't
it? Exactly.
Isn't it? It had been
until that moment. And then they said, well, no, actually, it happened at New Hampshire, but it happened at New Hampshire to the 48 again. I mean, it was still another.
Yeah.
They were using the same example as another, as a precedent, which is a kind of a weak argument, you know. But.
And Johnson's a firestorm anyway, because your point of perception is reality is spot on with that 48 car. Because people have a perception one way or the other that NASCAR is always trying to either bury the 48 or help the 48 out. That, you know, that you're on one side of the fence or the other. And that's a lot of perception as well. So no matter what happens with a ruling as far as Jimmy Johnson goes, there's a group of people that just get upset about it.
And I think to a lesser extent this year, I think that whole phenomenon you've just described is starting to apply to the 78 a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think NASCAR was quick at Kansas. I think they were quick to, okay, we're going to make 78. We're going to call him on this. It's still early in the race. He's very fast. He'll probably come back. But this is going to actually kind of make us look good by penalizing the 78. I don't dare say that didn't go through somebody's mind. Here's a chance.
It could have gone through someone's mind. That's a fair point to make. But if you look at the rule book and how the rules were applied and the message that the drivers and crew chiefs received in the Kansas driver meeting, you're actually 100% on again that rule was followed to the T by NASCAR. The penalty was put in place by NASCAR how it is written. That is why the 78 got penalized. Kevin Harvick in the 4 did not. Now, the guy, you're right, the average fan looking at the grandstands or watching from the grandstands or watching on TV is going, what in the world is going on with this? What? They're not understanding it. And I had to get a clarification. I know I didn't understand it, but it's the case of NASCAR is following the rule book. It is written out. They all know it ahead of time. But why do we have all these rules? It's the Talladega Daytona double yellow line. It's the track limits at Austin, Texas. We've got paint on the racetrack, and we're determining by the paint where we can and can't go. But because one guy does it under these conditions, that's okay, and another guy does something with the paint, that's getting a penalty. And that's just too many rules and too confusing. It's you're fixing something that wasn't broken.
Yeah,
exactly. And when you're trying to attract fans or the casual fan, they just don't understand it. It's beyond them.
Longtime fans don't get it. How long have we all been following the sport? Decades.
Oh, yeah, all of our lives.
But the casual fan, for sure, or the new fan, for sure, they're shrugging their shoulders and walking away.
Yeah,
exactly.
They don't get it. They're not trying to get it.
A casual fan told me just the other day, he said, I don't watch NASCAR anymore. He said, and if I did, I would need a calculator, and a yellow legal pad.
That's right.
To sit there and be writing all the numbers and mess down and adding them up to see if I could understand the race. And he's, I mean, he's right. It's too It's a simple sport. It really is. It is super complicated. Now, I mean, you would need a legal pad and a calculator to keep up with all the stuff.
You know, back in the, I guess it was the 70s, there was a guy named Bob Harmon that used to have the All-Pro series.
Yeah, I remember that.
I remember Bob.
He had another series that he ran in addition to that. KISS, Keep It Simple, Stupid.
Patrick, you made a good, an interesting comment a while ago that it was NASCAR is now just a microcosm of corporate America. You know, with meetings after meetings and vice presidents and all, and they're a very corporatized mindset. And they, without even thinking about it, they think, since that's how society does it now, that's how we've got to do it. We have to do it this way, this corporate mentality. And somehow it will work because that's the way corporations work. But but they are in the entertainment business. You know what? That's their product is entertainment. That's their fundamental reason to exist. If it ain't fun, there's a lot of other stuff people can watch.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of competition for time.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It is. I'm looking at the date of October 24th, and this is a new, I think it's with the stages, it's been, this is a new point system. This is the first year, 2017. October 24th, I still don't understand what a playoff point is and how that works.
I don't
either. I legitimately confess I do not know how the championship is calculated. I need the broadcast of whoever has it to explain it to me as we go, and I take for granted that they're explaining it correctly, because when somebody asks me, hey, how do the stages work and the points and all that, I've been at this for over 40 years. I do not know. More importantly, that NASCAR needs to pay attention to, I don't care. I legitimately don't care. You know, it's like, you know, I don't. You've made it too complicated, the point of our discussion here tonight. Too many rules. You've lost me. You've lost me. I don't care.
Well, I noticed the TV numbers for Kansas was not too impressive. And Talladega had been up a little bit last week. That was a little bit of a breath of fresh air, but the Kansas deal, it was what I read was 1.6. So I mean, and last year's Kansas race was 2.0. So,
I look at the numbers and the math on that, and I just look at, I don't know where the people are going with that as far as, you know, the planning to try to get NASCAR the best TV rating possible. You have it on, you know, NBC, I believe, had Talladega. Yeah, NBCSN had Kansas. We threw the green flag at Kansas at about a little after 3 on the East Coast. So you gave the NFL a 2-hour head start on the NASCAR Cup race, as well as NBCSN went head-to-head with its own network, NBC, with the Formula One race from Austin, Texas. It just seems like, boy, could we have planned a little better, you know, shift Austin or Kansas one up, one down to make it like a motorsports day, maybe, that would have stood a better chance against the NFL TV juggernaut. It just seems like they could have done that.
So,
I don't know.
So here's a thought to share with you, okay? We've seen all of NASCAR, the planning, the rules, and everything, this whole scenario of playoffs and those kind of points and things, all tailored toward stick and ball, NFL, baseball, that kind of thing. And now look what's happening there. Patrick, before you go, before we get off, we got a few minutes left. We started off the show tonight talking about the 10-year anniversary coming up in January.
Yeah.
And do you remember when you first came on the air with us?
I believe so. It's a little fuzzy, but yeah, I believe so.
Was it 2011?
It was 2010.
Was it?
I think so. I think it was June of 2010.
Huh, that's cool. So I'm going to tell the story here, okay, and we'll relive this stuff again later on. But when we were building this network up, we were looking for content, and someone told me that I needed to go listen to a show. And I forget the radio station. You remember it because you work for them now, right, Patrick?
Yes. Full circle. Yes. It was the One and Done radio show and WSIC out of Statesville, North Carolina.
And was it Garrity? Was he the host,
Mike,
right?
Yes. Mike Garrity was hosting the show, and I was the co-host. And it was a one-hour weekly auto racing talk show on an AM station in Statesville, North Carolina.
So someone gave me the tip to go listen to the show that it might be something that would interest us at Racers Reunion for content to put on our show. So I listened to it, and I remember going, I can't even remember who it was now, but I went back to that person. I said, well, you know, I mean, Garrity's a nice guy and everything, but who's the Patrick Reynolds guy? I liked his opinion. I liked his points. You know, he impressed me. So somehow I figured out how to get in touch with Patrick through that deal. You know, he just happened to be a guest that day. Or I don't, were you a regular then, or were you a, I don't even remember. But anyway... So I got a hold of Patrick, and we started talking about the possibility of him, you know, doing his own thing, and agreed to build a website and create a show around his ideas and what he wanted to do. And Patrick had always been a fan of Dave Despain and Ken Squire and those guys, and so had I. And we kind of came up with that concept to do that Motor Week Live deal, and all that has morphed into this, you know. Cool stuff. More history.
Yeah. Yeah, I think an email just popped up one day, and it was you. And I had heard of you guys, but obviously our relationship wasn't, you know, anywhere near as close as it is now. But you basically said, "Hey, I heard your show. Give me a call." And I think we just went from there. And I've been fortunate to be part of this, because I always liked Wind Tunnel show on Speed Channel that Despain used to host, and Speed Center, and the old, you know, we built it off of Motor Week Illustrated, which used to be WTBS 5:35 Saturday afternoons back in the 80s. I was always a big fan, where it was just a free-for-all of auto racing. If it had an engine and go fast, I was game, and I was up to taking on the task of you know, stock cars or Indy cars or drag racing or road racing or what have you, because when it comes to stick and ball sport, my brain is empty on that anyway. I don't know anything about it. So, you know, racing was my game. So this has been a privilege and a whole lot of fun for me to be around you guys.
Well, it's been a privilege for us too. And I might add too that we also had the privilege of having Mr. Squire on your show.
Yes, we did.
You know,
I remember that.
We basically have his blessing for what we did. We copied his idea, which he had discarded, so, you know, it was okay.
To this day, that was one of my favorite interviews ever that we ever did. He was very, stiff, maybe not welcoming at first. At the beginning, when we first started it, it was a little stiff, it was a little solid, yep. And then it started to flow, and at the end, we literally ran out of time. I had to cut him off because we were engaged so much, and he was telling fantastic and wonderful stories. I loved it, and we just ran out of time. But we could have gone on a long time with Ken Squire, one of my favorite interviews we ever did.
That is one of mine, too. And you described it exactly right. It was a little cold, a little stiff at the beginning, and it was like, who are these guys? You know, what are they up to? But the more he got to know you and what we were doing, the more he opened up, and that was a great interview. And the one thing that I regret out of all this is that I don't have or haven't done yet, and maybe some intern somewhere along the way will do that, cataloged the thousands of interviews that we've done on this network, stock car racing, drag racing, and everything.
Oh, man, you need to do that. Somehow
I mean,
you need
we have an amazing – we still have everything. I mean, everything that we've ever done is on a hard drive somewhere sitting here. But the cataloging that and we didn't know enough back then how to title them. They were titled just the show name and the date most of the time, so we don't know who was on it. You know, somebody's going to have to go back and listen to all that stuff and catalog it. And because not just for stock car racing, but there's just you know, we had Sam Augser Jr. as a host, Wally Bell as a host, and Bill Pratt's been with us for about the same length of time Patrick has with Racing and Rock, and those guys do a phenomenal job too. Still, you know, having great programming on there. So. I mean, there are literally, over the past 10 years, thousands of interviews that need to be resurrected. So
I had a Facebook memory crop up not too long ago you know, from 5-6 years ago, you know, how they come up with, you know, on this date, you know, they share a memory. And it was a promotion for when the show was still called Motor Week Live. And it was Andy Santerre was the guest. And I go, I had Andy Santerre on the show? I didn't even remember. I didn't even remember. But I was like, I thought about it for like 15 seconds. I go, oh, yeah, that's right. I looked in my phone. I still got his number. I called him up, and he did the interview. And, you know, I remembered after. So it's been, as the years go by, you know, how do you forget you talked to so-and-so? Well, you do a few hundred of these. I guess you do.
Just well, there have been several times when Jack or Bobby or somebody would say, well, we ought to have old so-and-so on the show. And I'll say, well, we had him on in 2010. We did.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, we've had some greats on here. You know, some folks that are friends of Racers Reunion, like Waddell Wilson and Barry Dodson.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. We go on and on. You know, one of my all-time favorites, you know, I had the privilege, you know, the biggest name I think I ever had was Mario Andretti. I couldn't believe I scored that.
Yeah, that was
and,
great.
That was big. And, you know, you got the local, you know, street stock guys and late model guys or in the big national spotlight history guys. Is, you know, that's a good part about this network.
One of the most fun interviews we ever did on this show was when we had Speedy Spears.
Oh, yeah, Speedy.
And Ned Jarrett.
Oh yeah,
on the same show,
and they don't forget.
No, they did. They remembered every contact, every fender rub they'd ever had. You know, that was funny.
Yep.
I mean that was
still talking about Municipal Auditorium in Daytona Beach in the 50s. I think they were.
And Speedy says, "Yeah, I remember it. You did this, and that." Yeah. And Ned says,
"Ran halfway across the field, and took
that's
my
what,
car."
That's
out.
What he said. Yeah, and Ned says, "I don't remember that."
this sport is full of engines and cars and tires and speeds and tracks, and I say, you know, I always said, man, the people are by far the most interesting aspect of auto racing. Is the people, the stories. It's just I don't know if you get that in any other sport.
Yeah, really.
Like we do. You know, the characters, the personalities.
We often talk about, and we've done this on this show and Jerry's show and yours and others along the way, and it happens on Bill's show and John's every week when we ask someone to share a story. Okay. 9 out of 10 times, or probably 95 out of 100, the story relates to something that happened on the way to or on the way from the race rather than what happened at the race.
Yeah.
I mean, just think about that.
Yeah, true.
You know?
Or the shop.
Bill Tripp losing his false teeth.
I did.
That happened.
When I was still on the Thursday night, I entered into this into Racers Reunion Thursday nights at 9 o'clock. Had the late shift my first time around with you guys, and I remember one show I had Waddell Wilson on. We did 26 straight minutes of live radio. I asked Waddell only 2 questions.
Yep.
He just went from story to story, and I could not get enough. I was like a kid in a candy store.
Oh, no,
another guy just had to cut him off. We were out of time. I was sorry, man. You know, Big D was producing the show at the time, but it was fantastic. Fantastic. You don't find that anywhere else.
No, nope, you don't. That's cool. And you know that they're enjoying themselves when that happens, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's cool that we, you know, that you give someone the opportunity to share something that was important with them with people that they didn't even know were their fans.
Mm.
You know? I always say that Racers Reunion was created because of, you know, old Joe was sitting at home on the couch thinking, well, nobody remembers me or cares about what I did, and there's a million people out there thinking, wonder what happened to old Joe.
Mm-hmm. You know? We connect them.
Yep, and that's what we did. We're legends and fans unite. That was the purpose of all of it, and, man, it's been a cool little ride, and hope it continues. But so we're about to run out of time here. Patrick, thanks for joining us tonight, man. That's cool. We'll have you up there side by side with the guys with the Goat Rodeo.
Yeah, it's fun for me. It's a cool view. It's a privilege always to be on Racing Through History. Thanks for the invitation. I appreciate it. I love listening, and even I feel honored to join you guys when I get the chance.
Well, we knew you fit in way back then in 2010, whatever it was. We said, I like this guy. He fits. He's good.
He's
fresh and current, and he thinks like us.
There you go.
Thanks. You guys are all right. You're my kind of people. It's a privilege for me to be a part of this.
Cool, man. Fun
Thank
stuff.
Thank you.
All right. All right, cool. Let's get on out of here. Thanks to everybody for helping us put this show together. We just ad-libbed the whole show, didn't we?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We ad-libbed the whole freaking show. That's cool. That was fun. Yeah. Thanks to all you fans for tuning in, listening to us. We appreciate you. And as always, we want to say a special thanks to the men and women in the military. Thank you for doing what you do so that we can do this. Each and every one of you, good night. And God bless. Peace.